2 weeks ago, the world watched as peaceful protesters in Libya came out in defiance of a regime notorious for its brutal suppression of any voices of dissent.
It was anything but safe for anti-Qaddafi protesters who had called for a Friday of liberation.
Qaddafi's forces fired on protesters in Tripoli as they emerged from mosques holding Friday.
Every town in eastern Libya was filled with protesters today. People hoping that momentum is on their side and that Gaddafi will be gone in days, if not hours.
But something changed. Suddenly, the media dropped the phrase protester and started talking about rebels instead.
In Benghazi, international news cameras were brought to see rebel fighters training civilian volunteers.
Attacks continued to escalate between government forces and rebels on several fronts this
morning. On the west side of Tripoli, they were in rebel control. The rebels held on, but the rebels didn't gain any ground either.
The shift in rhetoric may have been subtle to some, but for others it was a jarring change. Rebels, said many in the Twitter sphere, was a pejorative. It was a word that separated the outside world from the struggle for democracy. Foreign policy managing editor Blake Hounshell doesn't see why people should find the word problematic.
I don't find it a negative term at all. There is a certain romanticism, actually, that I think a lot of us have about rebels. A lot of people still like to root for the underdog, and certainly the overwhelming majority of Americans are cheering on the anti-Qaddafi folks in Libya. There's not a lot of love for the Qaddafi side. In my own thinking, just as I was writing sentences myself, I had to think about at different points in the narrative, when do you call someone a protester? When do you call someone a rebel? When do you call someone anti-Gaddafi forces or pro-Gaddafi forces? As a journalist, I think it's a lot more precise and accurate term to use. You can't really call someone with an RPG a protester anymore. At that point, really, they've become a rebel.
So was it at that point at which the world's media decided pretty much together to switch from protester to rebel?
These things often happen almost before you fully realize it, and then you realize it. You begin thinking that word doesn't sound right.
New York Times foreign editor Susan Shira talks about making the switch.
I couldn't, frankly, pinpoint the moment, but it became clearer and clearer that we were not talking about Egypt or Tunisia-style large demonstrations, but something that had become a military conflict.
She says there are likely to be more semantic shifts in the future to keep pace with the evolving situation in Libya.
We also had a discussion about whether to use the word civil war, and we began introducing that terminology, in effect, for some of the same reasons. We've said it's a step closer to civil war. I guess we haven't called it a full-out civil war because we're trying to be cautious. I mean, you have actual ground clashes between rebels from the east and Gaddafi loyalists. You have airstrikes. You have loyalist troops on the ground fighting rebel troops on the ground. So that comes a lot closer to the edge of what you could call civil war. I guess we've hesitated to say full-fledged civil war because it has been relatively contained clashes in certain areas.
But you do see the potential for the semantic tide turning toward civil war.
Absolutely, I do. We're watching it. I think it's very close.
What would tip you over?
When I would feel comfortable saying they're an absolute civil war is if we have several running days of extended clashes, ground fighting, extended bombing runs, which have been difficult to completely verify. But I think we're very close to that.
And the challenge to choosing the right terminology is not limited to the fast-changing situation on the ground in Libya, but the evolving nature of what is meant by civil war.
This is a very unusual conflict. I mean, I think civil war is one of those fascinating phrases, because in Iraq we eventually decided that it could and should be labeled a civil war, even though you didn't really have two armies. You essentially had sectarian conflict fueling mass killing of civilians. It wasn't just combatants. So civil war is a term that has evolved in how it's used. And I think that definition remains an evolving one.
You know, what's interesting is that civil war is also a freighted term. I know the Bush administration did not want it applied to Iraq.
No, they didn't.
Because it would suggest that there isn't any role for foreign governments there. And if that happens in Libya, will that give people leave to walk away from this conflict and not to engage? Does it give foreign powers who are now looking to help a reason to walk away?
we can't be guided by what might happen if we use a term. I am a journalist, and what I do is describe what we see as accurately and precisely as possible. I'm not going to not use a phrase because I think it might influence policy one way or the other. Let's just be accurate, and then, you know, we'll see where the policymakers go.
But words do frame things.
Absolutely.
And civil war is a frame.
Right. Well, that's why we're trying to be careful and cautious. I mean, it's also an uprising. I think that's a word we've used and will continue to use.
Susan Shira is the foreign editor of the New York Times. Several people have told me that the moment they hear the word rebel, they begin to disconnect. The effect is compounded when combined with the phrase civil war. Whether or not people like us on the other side of the world choose to engage or even follow the story is a decision each of us makes every day. We think we make those choices consciously, weighing the expense in time and mental energy with what we stand to gain. But often, we decide without deciding. What we choose can hinge on the unrecognized power of a single word.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.